This week on Hyperspace Broadcasts, remember Dr. Milo? No? Well, he is a pretty forgettable villain. But he's back! Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcast, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it was worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about Batman the Animated Series, Season 2, Episodes 12 through 24. I'm just going to give a heads up to listeners. I have been sick for the last couple of days, so if my voice starts sounding like a teenager's, that's why. So, before we start talking about these episodes, I had a pretty strange thought while making the outline the other day, which is basically, American pop culture is super pervasive across the world.
Sure.
But I was wondering what it would be like if Batman or any of these kinds of shows somehow was not super well known and got imported to, like, France or something. And was combined for whatever reason with a different show in the same genre.
Oh, like Voltron?
Yeah, right, basically.
A Robotech?
Yeah, of course. Or Voltron, as I like to think of it.
Yeah, they get Voltron.
Yeah, so...
I can't imagine combining Batman the Animated Series with anything except maybe the Superman show.
Well, yeah, and those are already the same thing, but... For some reason, the example I thought of was Freakazoid, which is technically a show in the same genre. It has a similar style of animation, shares like one of the creators, and, you know, it's by the same studio. So,
and then shares nothing else.
Yeah, of course. But I don't know. I was trying to think like how they would shoehorn Freakazoid into the Batman universe.
They'd probably just do as sloppy a job as Robotech. You just like you just have voiceover at towards the end of Batman the Animated Series, and then towards the beginning of Freakazoid, where it's just like, and then the Batman decided to turn in his old costume and change his identity because he was tired of the whole Bat gimmick.
Yeah, right.
Man, like... Bat scared him too much, and now he's scared of bats. But he sure is a freak.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking like. They make it so that the parents of the guy who becomes Freakazoid are Bruce Wayne and like Selina Kyle or something.
Yeah, there you go.
It's just all right. Their son also becomes a superhero, and he's hiding it from them because they have passed as super characters.
Or like Batman's identity gets found out, and he gets chased out of town by these villains,
mm-hmm.
and then he just goes insane. And dons the red pajamas and becomes fucking Freakazoid.
You know, it's funny because...
Freakazoid, you know what I remember about Freakazoid is only time I've had a waking coma or whatever.
was sleep paralysis?
Watching Freakazoid. Sleep paralysis, that's right. I had sleep paralysis when I was like 10 or 12.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to stay up all night. And you know what's on at night? Freakazoid's on at 4 a.m. And I was basically like passing out, and like I woke up and could not feel anything, and I could only see, and I could not feel myself breathing, so I thought I was gonna die. And Freakazoid was on, so all you know,
so
as far as I knew as a kid,
Freakazoid with death, basically,
with imminent death. I loved that show though,
yeah, so did I.
But that could have been the last thing I'd ever seen. It's just a captive audience staring at Freakazoid, not even able to hear it as I slowly asphyxiate.
Oh, God.
It's fun.
Yeah, no, it's funny because I had to look up Freakazoid because I was like, you know, I'm pretty sure that was Warner Brothers. And it, like, I just wanted to refresh my memory of the show.
It was, right?
Yeah, it was. So, I read the Wikipedia article and sort of remembered all this stuff about it, like, basically the origin story of Freakazoid, because my original pitch for the combination of the two was that he was the son of the Joker and Harley Quinn, which would have made sense because he's, you know, crazy. He's a maniac. but he's like a kid from an average family, and then it has something to do with computers that turns him
into computers and lightning striking or something.
Yeah, something like that. He's like the internet distilled, which nowadays would be a much darker show.
That's fucked up.
It'd be all the horror of Twitter and you know, all that garbage. Modern Freakazoid. Well, there's your dark and gritty Freakazoid reboot live action movie.
Oh no.
Good lord. Boy. All right. Well,
how about these Batmans, huh?
Yeah, let's talk about non Freakazoid. So let's get into our zeniths and nadirs of this block. You know, big surprise, this block's pretty solid. I think my like top episode is gonna have to be season 2 episode 24, Mudslide.
That's interesting.
Yeah, we kind of gave Clayface a short shrift 2 episodes ago. We didn't really talk about him, even though his introductory episodes are actually really good.
They're excellent. Yeah,
and that's part of the reason I picked this, because I feel like we should talk about Clayface because he's an interesting character. But also, I picked this because it has perhaps like the darkest ending of any of these shows so far. With the possible exception of Heart of Ice, but this one still, for some reason, just like was a gut punch to me. Basically, the idea of the episode is that Clayface is like, you know, this mud monster, basically, who can change into, you know, he can mimic other people. He's basically the T-1000, but made out of mud instead of liquid metal. So he is dissolving, like his body is losing its cohesion, and Batman's trying to help him, but he doesn't want Batman's help. He's being helped by this female scientist who basically like puts him in a big human-shaped Ziploc bag. That's the only way I can describe it, and it looks really weird.
They have like a big plastic mold, like it's a creepy crawlers factory.
Yeah,
and it just slowly seals him down and basically puts him in a plastic mold so that he can't just explode everywhere.
Yeah, right. So he doesn't melt. He's like contained, like you know, frosted in a Ziploc. And it's great because he kind of looks like a bootleg action figure. Like an unpainted bootleg action figure of something.
Yeah, he looks like an unpainted Martian Manhunter.
Yes, he actually does a lot.
Yeah.
If for some reason you molded Martian Manhunter in like orangey brown.
Yeah, orange brown.
At any rate, the thing about this episode is he's stealing this formula from Wayne Medical Technology that can, you know, it can make him back into who he was before he became Clayface, essentially. Like, it'll allow him to keep one form permanently. But he's stealing it, so Batman intervenes. And the episode ends with him fighting Batman in the rain, and this female scientist is like, stop, your body's going to absorb the water, and it's going to dilute you. And then, you know, Batman and he fall off a cliff. Clayface grabs onto Batman's ankle. Batman's trying to help him up, but Clayface is melting, basically.
Yeah.
So his arm like melts apart, and then he falls into the water and then just dissolves.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty clear, he's dead now. Like, he's gone. And so the episode literally ends with, you know, a wide shot of the cliff with this scientist sobbing and Batman like kind of putting a comforting arm around her shoulder, and then it cuts to credits. Right. And I was like,
it's like, oh
damn. That's
it. You kind of expect it to show like maybe some mud crawls out of the water somehow and it reforms into him later. Nope.
Or not just that, like, he's but dead. Like, so many of these episodes, you know, when it's something like that, there'll be some kind of, well, they'll be back, or, you know, like something from Batman. There's usually a closing scene with Batman that kind of softens the blow. I guess this and probably the Heart of Ice episode are the two most gut punch endings, because they just end on a real downer, and there's nothing to help recover your mood. It's just, yep, that's it, kids. Have a good day. Stay tuned for Dragon Ball Z, probably.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Clayface is great. Like, when I first saw him and saw his first original form, I was just like, oh fuck, what is this? Like, it's just this shitty looking glob mud man. And then like they do all the animation with it is so cool, and they did all the transformations and stuff. I talked a little bit about this last week, but you know, it's like the way it works into combat, where like he can just like form all, like swords and shit with his arms, mm-hmm. or hammers, or just anything that suits his needs, is really interesting, and it really makes for a good time. Like,
yeah,
and seeing him just get all fucked up too. Like in the previous episode, he's like transforming to 18 different things at once. And
yeah, right.
Control.
I actually posted a GIF of that.
Two
weeks ago now.
And this one, he's like melting and like just like falling apart, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing that's nice is that, like you mentioned, getting creative with the combat, but I feel like this episode they really like took it up a notch. I mean, there's a scene in this where Clayface just absorbs Batman into his body to smother him,
that was
which
crazy.
Is really gross, and like there's something about that I just love the creativity of. Well, he's a giant blob, so
yeah,
he could just do this.
Yeah.
Or there's,
and then Batman bursts out of him with the grappling hook and
fires
flies out.
It
it's fucking
through
insane.
His head, and then comes out, and you know, his head split open. It's basically the T-1000 action sequences, but with a much grosser looking creature. There's also a really fun scene where he's disguised as like a scientist or something, and he sort of just smashes his face against a double like glass door that's locked sort of squirts through the gap.
Yeah, the tiny
into this
gap,
big
just,
puddle
like,
of
right
clay
through.
And then like forms into himself again.
It
was
so
is
nasty. Yeah.
Similarly
great.
Ingenious and gross.
Yeah. My favorite episode of this block was season 2, episode 18, Almost Got Him. And this is a great, just fun episode. When I first saw this, it was like, oh, this is an episode with multiple supervillains in it. Like, what is this going to be? It's going to be like Spider-Man 3, where they like try to do too much and it sucks. Or is it going to be like,
or
they
the
give
amazing
everyone...
Spider-Man 2, where they did the exact same thing?
I don't know, man. Oh, the amazing! I don't know. I never saw the Amazing Spider-Man 2.
No, the amazing.
I thought you were talking sarcastically about Spider-Man 2. It's like I remember.
No,
Spider-Man 2
no, no, no. The
good.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 pretty much had the exact same problem where they had like three
the
villains
amazing
and all of
Spider-Man
them were
2.
Super undeveloped. Yeah, the Andrew Garfield ones.
The either that or is where they're just gonna be like boiled down to caricatures of themselves. But I was proven wrong in this episode. It's just fun. Like, you start with all these supervillains playing poker, which is just ridiculous and like the fun kind of way that I like seeing these absurd characters doing everyday things. And they're all telling stories about how like, oh man, I almost got Batman once, let me tell you. And they're all just fucking the most absurd stories that they could never make into full episodes. But thank God they have this, because we get to see so many stupid situations.
Yeah,
Poison
just
Ivy,
dumb plots.
Poison Ivy makes a bunch of exploding pumpkins with gas inside. Two-Face ties Batman to a giant penny and like flips it to try and destroy him.
Yeah, he has a 50-50 shot of not being crushed by the penny.
But he also pretty brutal. He's like, well, if you land on the right side, it's just gonna break all the bones in your body.
That's
like, it's still gonna fucking murder him. Penguin lured him into an aviary and attacked him with hummingbirds with poison-tipped beaks and a cassowary, which is like a giant, almost reptilian kind of bird.
And he sprays him with like a pollen or something that attracts
hummingbirds,
the hummingbirds to him. So,
yeah, similar to the butterflies from Sailor Moon, the deadly butterflies that just fly around and cause things to break.
Yeah, cause light bulbs
Batman
to explode for no reason.
Batman is swarmed by hummingbirds. He grabs a hummingbird and uses it to stab the cassowary to death, which is the most brutal thing.
Stab it to death indicates that he stabs it repeatedly. He just stabs it once, but it has a poison tipped beak.
Right. It's like, that is just so insane. Joker hosts a talk show where Batman is trapped in an electric chair that's powered by audience laughter. And he's like, well, no one's going to laugh, so I'm just going to pump in my laughing gas.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
Then he's saved by Catwoman.
And it all has this. It all turns out to be kind of a frame story for something that's just happening, which is like Catwoman saves him, but then it ends up getting captured by the Joker and is still captured. And then, and you also get Killer Croc in the mix. And Killer Croc is just a moron, and everyone's treating him like an idiot,
which
is really funny.
Pretty funny.
And he's just like, I almost got Batman. It was with the big rock. And
yeah, yeah.
Just like looking at him. And he's just like, this really big rock.
Yeah, that's maybe my favorite scene of like, I lured him into the sewer and then I threw a rock at him.
Yeah, yeah. And it turns out Batman was in the Killer Croc outfit the whole time.
Somehow. And, classic cartoon, yeah, right, disguise kind of, that's perfect.
Yeah, impossible. And then he gets threatened, and then everyone else in the bar, it turns out in the background, were all cops, and they all just start fucking cocking their guns like it's a fucking crazy Mexican standoff.
Yeah,
it was,
yeah,
awesome. And then there's still like a story to like go save Catwoman in time. So that was fun. That was just a really good episode. Just really like funny and like lighthearted with very absurd vignettes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That, and then also framed with like the humorous interactions between the incongruous supervillain characters. Like none of these guys would hang out. I can't, yeah, imagine the Joker hanging out with pretty much any of these
with
guys.
Two-Face.
Like, why would Two-Face bother with any of this,
yeah,
shit?
Yeah, yeah, and it's great, too, because, you know, there's a scene where, like,
gotta
Poison...
Gotta play poker with Killer Croc again, goddammit.
Or Poison Ivy comes in and, like, basically shit-talks Two-Face because they,
yeah,
dated in an episode way earlier in,
yeah,
the series.
Yeah, that was great.
It's a fun...
What about the least favorite episode
of
this block?
Wait a minute. Before we get to that, I do want to mention... our forklift obsession. This episode does feature Batman driving a forklift
<That's true. laughs>
and apprehending two criminals by somehow getting the backs of their shirts on the forklift,
yeah,
like
perfectly on the
spines, and lifting them up like they're like baby kittens being lifted,
yeah,
up,
yeah,
by their mom.
Yeah, and that's really, I think, the what they intended to for us to compare it to.
Yeah, right. But it has Batman driving a forklift, so now all we,
yeah,
need is Goku driving a forklift, and I think we're good.
Wait, who was our first forklift driver?
It was Ezekiel Rage in
right.
Real Adventures of Johnny Quest. We talked about
that's
this
right.
last week, I think.
I wouldn't be surprised if like Duo or Hiroyui piloted a forklift.
You might be right.
In an episode of Wing. I feel like that could have happened.
Yeah, that could have easily happened. Oh, man. Yeah, so as far as least favorite episodes, though, I think I'm going to have to go with Season 2, Episode 15, Moon of the Wolf.
Moon of the Wolf!
Which is just a weird episode. I mean, again, last week we mentioned that there was an animation company that was so subpar that it was, like, dreaded by every director that their episode would be animated by this company. About halfway through this episode, I was like... I bet this was done by that company, and yes, it was. That's Acom right. Productions, by the way, or Production. I don't remember. But the point is, this is an episode about a werewolf, basically, who is sort of created by Dr. Milo, who you might remember as the dog-catching scientist.
Yeah, one of the two shitty dog-catching goons from that last
episode. One of the three shitty dog-catching goons. He was the scientist dog-catching goon. And I don't know. Dr. Milo's not an interesting villain.
No.
He can't really carry an episode by himself. The whole plot is just like kind of boring werewolf stuff. And, you know, his scheme doesn't really make any sense. Like, it doesn't look very good. There's a lot, like, you notice animation errors pretty frequently, which you don't,
yeah,
for the most part with this show. And then there's one really weird thing about it, which is that all of the music in the show is, you know, orchestra. This episode has, like, guitar. And
yeah,
it's like electric guitar. It's really out of place.
It's like very cheesy too. It's like cheesy, just like riffs on a guitar, like heavy metal riffs.
Yeah, it starts right from the title card, just like power chords.
Yeah.
Is what is going on here? Like, why is it like this?
It's also worth noting that this is the second episode in a row in this block that has to do with animorphs.
Yeah,
like
it
has to
animal
do with
hybrids of some kind.
The first one being like probably the best of that. Like, this is the second of three animal hybrid episodes in this,
yeah,
which is
in this
really
block.
Annoying. It's the, you know, like the first one is probably the best, but also not great. which is just like a very Island of Dr. Moreau episode where mm-hmm. Catwoman gets turned into a Catwoman.
Yeah, and, literal Catwoman. You know, and she's to be married to a Catman.
The episode, the episode that launched the careers of a million fan artists, I'm sure.
yeah.
Because, come on.
Yeah, of course.
And, yeah, so... And following that is my nadir, season 2, episode 17, Terror in the Sky. It's Man-Bat, sort of. And, yeah, here we go again with another Animorph. Fucking another Man-Bat. It's like, hey, I was cool with the one Man-Bat episode. I don't really care enough to have anything more than that. Like, I don't care about that there's a Batman hybrid that's not Batman. But, yeah, you know, this whole episode's just like... Who is this Man-Bat? Everyone's going nuts and like, oh, everyone suspects the original Doctor and everyone's pissed off at him. His wife wants to leave him. But it turns out his wife is secretly the one who's infected and even she doesn't know. And it like yeah, ends right. on an airplane where she transforms into a Woman-Bat.
Yeah, She-Bat, I believe, is the...
Yeah. I'm board this passenger liner with him in it and we're just like, oh shit, this is going to be insane. And it's kind of insane. But it's like,
pretty insane.
Yeah, that's true, but it's like
features people falling out of a plane. Like,
yeah, this is the one of the episodes where I was like, oh man, I wish the bet we decided on was going to be the one where Batman saves people from falling.
Yeah,
because it happens all the time and it happened like 13 times this episode.
Yeah, it happens a ton in that episode alone. I didn't hate this episode, but it is
I didn't either, but
yeah,
like, I had a little different. I to be fair, I had some difficulty picking like a least favorite in this
block.
Of
course, yeah.
Because they're all like, I would say this block isn't not you know not, wasn't quite up to par with the rest of them, but mm-hmm. was still a very solid chunk of episodes. Just like all of this Batman stuff has been.
But sure, and I think
this, I was getting tired of this suffered partly from the fact that we were binging it and we were watching it in order, and the order happens to be that this is...
Yeah, that there's a bunch of animal hybrid episodes. And, yeah, and the thing with Terror in the Sky 2, which I was going to say earlier, is it's very similar to the werewolf episode, because it's basically werewolfism, yeah. except, you know, a bat.
Except with a bat.
It's were-bat-ism, basically. It's like the same exact, like... oh, I don't remember, who's the werewolf, you know, all that shit. And it's
just the same stupid mystery. Like, is it real? Oh, it is. Who is it?
And I think it worked better in this than it did in the werewolf episode, to be fair, partly because it's at least something a little different and because they established it already. So it makes sense that you would expect that Langstrom is Man-Bat again, or that, you know, like his panic about it makes a lot more sense. Whereas the perfectly named Anthony Romulus turning into a wolf is pretty ineffective because, you know, we've never seen him before. There's no context for it. And I don't know. Like, that's kind of a stupid critique to have, but I just didn't. There wasn't anything for me to grab onto with that, and it didn't help that the villain was so boring as well. But now I'm talking about my thing again.
Well, what about your honorable mention?
I'm gonna have to go with season 2, episode 20. It's called What is Reality? In this block, the Riddler is introduced in actually the first episode we watched.
Edward Nygma, yep. Speaking of dumb names.
Yeah, well.
Enigma.
At least that's from the comics, is the thing.
Sure.
Like, Anthony Romulus, they did make for the show. And it's weird, because apparently they based him on a character from the comics called Anthony Lupus, who's also naturally a werewolf. I kind of prefer that name, though. I don't know why. They're both equally stupid.
I wish he had lupus.
Yeah, that's the real thing. He's not a werewolf. He just has lupus.
Or that this guy was a Romulan.
Ooh, that would be nice. Or Continue. He founded Rome, mythically.
Yeah, with his brother.
Yeah. So, anyway, we've got the Riddler coming back, or Edward Nygma, whichever you prefer, and... He has hacked a bunch of computers, deleted any records of his existence, and of course left a bunch of riddles. And eventually this kind of leads to this big puzzle box that Robin solves pretty much immediately. And it's a virtual reality machine that Gordon gets trapped in kind of crazily.
Yeah, he just like happens to put it on and then he can't get out. And basically... And the Riddler's like, okay, so I've locked him into this crazy, intense simulation that will give him a heart attack in a couple hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what he's doing with him. So Batman has to go into the virtual reality program to save him. And this isn't a great episode. In fact, it suffers from one of the things that I really dislike about Riddler episodes, which is, full disclosure, I am terrible at riddles. Uh-huh. My mind does not work that way. Like, I once played a session of D&D where we ran into a Sphinx and we sat around for hours trying to figure out the riddles, and it sucked. Like,
I remember that.
No, that was a different time.
Oh, okay.
There was a time before that, when Mike ran it, that it was even more frustrating riddles.
Oh, geez.
So we were literally sitting around for over an hour trying to figure out riddles because none of us were, you know, knew the thing. Anyway, the problem with the Riddler is every episode of Batman, the animated series, and this is also true in like the 60s series, any riddle he leaves, they figure out like snapping their fingers. Like,
yeah,
it's always so immediate. And I get it. You kind of need to do that because otherwise, you know, I don't want to see Batman pacing around like for 20 minutes.
But it's also like they're always like a crazy stretch too.
Yeah, right. Because they're riddles, because that's the whole thing. Like, they're all like puns and shit. I don't know.
But these are like, like Batman almost sounds like he's using numerology. It's just like
yeah, points he does.
That's the number of God. But 3 divided by 9 is, oh my God.
Yeah, no, there are,
I think I found the answer.
There are points where he does seem like a numerologist based on the leaps that he's taken. But it's one of those things that it's just a little frustrating to me because it makes the Riddler, like, it makes his gimmick seem completely ineffective.
Yeah.
And it just kind of makes the character a little less interesting. On the other hand, this episode has some of the craziest visuals I have seen in this show because they're in a virtual reality world, so they were just like, they could just do anything, even more than with Clayface. Like,
and it kind of looks like a Virtual Boy in that it's all red.
Yeah, it's all red and black. And I don't know, there's just, but, I mean,
yeah,
there's
play
like
with it a, lot.
A knight Batman riding a Pegasus at one point.
riding a constellation Pegasus, I think, and like... Right. Fighting other constellations. It's just like, what is happening?
There's a point where Batman like opens a door and a train, you know, comes at him and then he dives out of the way. And it's just this weird shot of a hallway with a bunch of doors and a train running between two of them with Batman in the foreground. And like S's shooting balls at him. It's just, there's so much like surreal imagery in this episode that I really liked, actually. And it's not a great episode, but... You know, it's an episode that features Batman and Riddler multiplying themselves by splitting, like, amoebas at the end fight each other.
Like, yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, it's crazy. Also, it's, like, perfect vaporwave fodder. I'm going to find
just like that.
I would like to edit that together. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to, but it's a good idea.
My honorable mention was Season 2, Episode 19, Birds of a Feather. This is a Penguin episode, finally.
Episode that focuses on the penguin.
Yeah. And it's amazing because Penguin basically robs an art museum and gets incarcerated. When he's like released, he claims to be all reformed and stuff, and he's like, all right, high society is gonna welcome me back. All the rich people love me.
Well, he's not
just gonna walk out to my limousine, and then like there's no limousine, no one cares about him, and he's just sad and rejected by high society.
Well, it's not just that, but he like goes to a club where the villains used to hang out and there's no one there. So he's just wandering around this empty club looking sad. And there's something really like cute almost about Penguin, this design of Penguin looking sad.
Yeah. And then these like random wealthy socialites are like, oh, you know, that last party was smashing when the Joker arrived and crashed the whole thing. We should try and hire a fucking supervillain. That'll make everyone, you know, remember this party.
Yeah, right.
And so they're like, fuck it, let's hire the Penguin and make him feel like he's special. And it turns out the Penguin is like the biggest slob in the world and like goes to this fancy restaurant and is just like golfing down fish.
Yeah, he's just swallowing fish whole, you know, like a penguin.
Yeah.
And singing along at an opera performance.
It's awful. And like, but like the people, like the rich people in this episode are such douchebags. Like, definitely played up. Like, it has, like, the snobby kind of,
my dad owns a dealership.
Yeah, and he has, like, the cravat, like, you know,
yeah,
scarf kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's very stylized, rich snobbery.
Yeah. I enjoyed this episode just because I liked seeing the Penguin act all hoity-toity and then constantly get let down. It was kind of just satisfying. It was really funny just seeing the Penguin be sad.
Yeah, sad Penguin is hilarious.
I did find the wealthy guy to be annoying, but, like, too annoying, like, to the point where it's kind of grating. Like, I don't know. I generally kind of hate the concept of high society and snobbery in that sense. But I guess at least because of that, I found it enjoyable to see these people get fucked with.
Yeah, sure.
It might sound a little weird, but, you know.
Well, and the thing is, it's a good Penguin episode that actually establishes a character for Penguin that I feel previous episodes haven't really.
Yeah. Previous episodes, it was just like, he makes bird puns, and I guess sometimes...
And he has birds, and I guess he fucking has poison-beaked hummingbirds to attack Batman with. What in?
And I never actually put together before this that the Penguin was, like, obsessed with being wealthy and classy and stuff.
Right.
It makes more sense that way.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the break, and when we come back, we'll talk about our thoughts on this block. We'll talk about the bet, and then lead off into our next set of Batman episodes.
You bet.
Hey there, listener. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far, and I wanted to thank you for listening. If you like the podcast, please consider subscribing on iTunes, and while you're there, consider writing us a review. If you want to interact with us more directly, we'd love to hear from you. We can be found at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter @HBpod. Our next episode will be up on December 27th, which means now is my opportunity to wish all you listeners a happy holidays, and we'll be back to Batman the Animated Series in just a moment. Alrighty, we're back from the break, and Peter, what did you think about this block?
This block was enjoyable, a little thematically repetitive, especially with the animal hybrid stuff. And, you know, they introduced the Riddler, who his episodes were decent, but, like, also a little, even a little repetitive in that aspect. I guess, I don't know. You can't call them repetitive because they both have riddles in them. Like, that's the Riddler.
Yeah. It's like, man, the Joker's episodes are so similar. He just makes jokes.
The VR one's totally different. So
yeah, right.
I guess
right.
That doesn't really count, but yeah, you know, and it's. I would say this block overall is not quite as good as the last two, but still very solid. Like, it didn't have, like, a blow your mind amazing episode, like Heart of Ice or the Robin two parter from last block.
Yeah,
or,
Robin's Reckoning.
Yeah, or even the Clayface introduction, which is also just really.
Yeah, or really, you know, the amazing Two-Face introduction, like, from the first block.
Yeah, and this didn't quite have anything of that quality, but it had some stuff that got close and was just, like, overall a good time, as this show tends to be. Like, it's rarely that an episode is, like, outright bad.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
I mean, even Moon of the Wolf I didn't think was, like, terrible. I just didn't really care.
Yeah. What were you thinking about this? I know you had some kind of topic to talk about.
Yeah, I... To be honest, I think my thoughts on this block more or less line up with yours. In general, it's a fine block. Nothing really totally stood out to me as a great episode. I mean, the Clayface one was pretty good, but at the same time, I mostly wanted to talk about it because I wanted to talk about Clayface.
Yeah.
But I think I'd kind of like to talk about this. I did notice more than before, and it might have been because I was kind of looking for it, but I noticed a few episodes with moments of just really good character writing, which is not a surprise for this show, because it's generally really good, but...
It is a surprise for Hyperspace Broadcast as a whole, as shows we watched tend to not have that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's not a whole ton of like great. I mean, I don't know. There was some good characterization in Dragon Ball Z, like Frieza beating his tail against the ground in front of Goku's face. That was fun. Yeah. That was good writing. Maybe not on this level. But yeah, I mean, really for me the big one was the Penguin episode that you talked about earlier, Birds of a Feather. I really didn't get what they were going for with Penguin in this show. You know, my exposure to the character is Batman Returns, which is pretty different, and the like Arkham games, which is also fairly different, where he's like an arms dealer. And you know, we'd seen several episodes with Penguin featured prominently, but I wasn't really getting it. You know, he's a bird villain.
Yeah, and that's basically all we got until this point.
Yeah, and this episode did a really good job of kind of writing him in such a way that it's clear that he kind of puts on this persona of being this really cultured, like, rich guy, gentleman, when in reality it's just kind of a front, and his general, like, you know, the people he deals with in the criminal world don't really realize that, but he won't actually fit in with people who are quote-unquote cultured and rich. Like, it gave me a perspective on the character that I thought was really interesting, actually. Yeah, for the first time.
And like, I feel like we both enjoy when the villains are cast in a sympathetic light. And usually it's like sympathetic because they have some kind of like serious injustice against them in the past that turns them on this kind of corrupt path of vengeance. And in this case, it is a sympathetic character, but just for a completely like funny reason. Like, it's just like, oh, he just doesn't fit in and thinks he does. Like, I feel sorry for him because he's just like constantly fucking up and thinking he's like amazing, and then slowly realizing that, oh no, it's all a facade.
Yeah, it was kind of this is the dumbest comparison, but it was kind of like one of those teen movies where I'm trying to think of what the actual movie is. I believe it's called She's All That. It used to play on Comedy Central a lot, and basically it's a movie about, you know, a jock character making a bet with his buddy that he can get the ugliest girl in school, because she has a ponytail and glasses, be prom queen. And then, you know, they start dating and he actually falls in love with her. And then she finds out, oh no, he was all a joke. Like the very classic. I mean, literally, that's the movie that Not Another Teen Movie parodied 100%. Like, that's the movie. That's basically what happens to Penguin here, actually. Like,
yeah, sort of.
It really is. He, you know, he's
all that.
Yeah, Penguin's all that.
Pretty much, yeah.
Now I'm just imagining like Kenan and Kel with the Penguin.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Here goes.
Who are the other cast members on All That? Do you remember any of them?
Danny Tamborelli.
Okay.
What's her name? The Amanda Bynes. She was on there for a couple years
ago. Oh, yeah, she was. And then
there was another woman who was on there who I don't quite recall. And I think I used to think she was Rosie O'Donnell, but she certainly wasn't. So, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, I think we got it.
I want Penguin to be in the cast of All That, you know, back in the 90s when it still existed. But,
well, you drawing this comparison also brings up the frightful possibility of there being like a teen Batman in high school show, which I'm sure was considered, you know.
I mean,
like, we made Smallville.
We've talked about this. It turned into Batman Beyond.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they did want to do that.
I'm dumb.
And by they, I mean executives.
Yeah. Like, the Penguin would have that episode. He would have He's All That.
He would be the,
it'd
like,
be like
weird,
it'd be like
guy.
Harley Quinn or someone, like, I bet I can get this guy to be prom king. He's so fucked up and shitty. In this episode, it's just a rich person doing that.
I feel like it would be Clayface. I feel like he would be the one that everyone would be like, oh, that weird-looking motherfucker.
But then at the end, he just morphs into a really handsome person. Like, oh, shit. We're wrong.
Oh, boy. Anyway, very much this episode is the Penguin, you know, legitimately turning over a new leaf and falling in love with this socialite, or seemingly anyway, who is kind of just manipulating him for the purpose of having a really killer party with a supervillain at it. And yeah, it's easy to feel bad for him in that situation because, I don't know, it seemed like he could have actually become a good person and then was...
But he's also, like, so aggressively bad at
everything. That's true.
Also pretty funny.
This is true. The other moment I think that has really good character writing is just a very small moment. There's an episode called The Man Who Killed Batman, Season 2, Episode 23. Generally,
spoiler alert.
Yeah. Generally a pretty good episode where basically this like pathetic dweeb of a criminal accidentally seems to kill Batman by dropping him into a propane tank, which explodes. yeah. Hank Hill would be very frustrated about the lack of safety protocols regarding that propane tank. But the thing that happens in this episode that's great is that, you know, eventually the Joker basically abducts him. Because he's pissed off that someone else killed Batman, especially someone so worthless and stupid.
Yeah.
So the way that he gets this guy, like the guy goes to jail for an unrelated thing, and then he's released due to his lawyer, which is clearly Harley Quinn out of makeup.
Harleen Quinzel, yeah, I believe she goes
her, by. Her actual name, technically. But... you know, again, this is probably the first time that they used it. So it was maybe intended as a very terrible alias here, but then they figured, you know, we'll just use that as her actual name. The point is, though, that she gets this guy, Sid, out of jail, and then Harvey Bullock says something to the effect of, "You look really familiar." And she makes a fairly bad joke at his expense, which is that she may have served him a subpoena. And then she takes a step and turns back around and says, "It was a small subpoena," and then continues walking away. And
I don't know if that's supposed to be a dick joke or not.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is because I don't know what else it could be. But I love it because it indicates this. It indicates to me that she could not help herself from making a joke when the opportunity arose, even if it was breaking character, which is just like a really, I don't know. There's something about that that I really love. And in Arkham Origins, which is not a great game, but has like one moment of great writing that's very similar to this. Spoiler alert for a game that's 4 years old now, I guess. But it turns out the Black Mask is actually Joker in disguise, of course.
Okay.
And there is this scene near the like midpoint slash end of the game where Joker as Black Mask has assembled all of the mercenaries he hired to kill Batman. And he starts the meeting with saying, "Batman deaths are coming in way below projections," in like his impression of the Black Mask voice. And then he starts giggling, which again is exactly like he couldn't help himself from making a stupid joke and laughing at it, even though it's completely breaking character. Like, I love that version of craziness of these characters that it's like, if there's an opportunity, I have to do it. Like, I don't know. There's something about that that I think is really endearing in a weird way.
Yeah.
What, like, do you have any moments of character writing that you think are exceptional in this?
I like how Robin is written. He always just tends to just kind of be the silly man to Batman's eternal straight man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he'll be a little goofier, at least in like the stuff he says, or just riff off of the fact that Batman has no sense of humor.
Yeah, right.
And I just find that kind of that interplay just enjoyable. Even if it is like, you know, it's not groundbreaking or anything, it's still just like fun to have someone cracking jokes behind his back.
Yeah, right. And yeah,
and you get that with Alfred sometimes too.
Yeah, I love Alfred's interactions with Batman. Alfred's constant dry sarcasm really gets to me. As someone whose sense of humor is basically that.
Yeah.
And also total zaniness.
Whoa.
But I've been thinking, like, part of the reason that some of the characters from this show really stand out from others, particularly villains, is this kind of writing. Like, I feel like you can read a line from Harley Quinn or like Clayface and understand who that character is. Whereas, for example, Dr. Milo just seems very generic and uninteresting.
Yeah. He seems like a goon with a degree.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
He just got a promotion, but he's still just a shitty goon who doesn't know how to talk.
Yeah,
or have
right.
a character.
And it's funny because he shows up again in Justice League Unlimited, actually. And
oh, God, really?
Yeah, he does. And I remember his... He doesn't have much of a scene, but he does have a scene. And I think they actually do kind of push the idea that all of his stuff is, like, animal hybrid ideas. And uh-huh. that they don't work super well. Which is kind of funny, and that's, like, trying to push that kind of characterization onto him. Like, okay, he has a gimmick. He's not just scientist, I guess, who deals with formulas or whatever.
Yeah, right.
You know, having some... It's really having a gimmick and being able to write to that gimmick in a way that seems authentic is super helpful. So speaking of gimmicks, let's talk about the bet for this week.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... It's a failed gimmick in that neither one of us succeeded in this bet.
Yeah, there's
we both thought there'd be way more Batmaning in the show called Batman.
It's not that much. Again, Batmaning being when he just disappears from a scene. There was almost, as you pointed out, a perverse necessity in showing him exit scenes.
Yeah, they actually showed him like opening a window in Commissioner Gordon's office to climb out. And it's like, look, fuck you. Like, the one time you ever do that is when we're, like, betting on it.
Yeah, I seem to remember, I think that was in the She-Bat episode, I can't really remember, it was that or the werewolf one, where it mattered that he opened the window because he, like, found a clue or something, but for a moment it really did just look like the show was just showing him open the window and leave.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like, while Gordon's back is turned, the show is actually just... for once showing him do the Batman goodbye.
Yeah, right.
So we both
lost that one, which means we're still tied 1-1, which is good. Yeah,
because this is our last block of for this segment of the Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
So we have one more bet. And
we do.
I thought of something for this. We're going to do poison gas attacks. How many times are characters attacked with poison gas that causes an effect,
and
just like smoke.
And I feel like I'll pull back the curtain a little bit to say that we had to delay this recording based on me losing my voice the other day.
Yeah.
So we did end up watching like a few episodes, and
I felt like a movie star. Like, oh man, like I need to work on my voice.
Yeah, right. I'm on vocal
rest. My voice
is
shot, so we
I told you about meeting Gillian Jacobs, right? When she was on vocal rest.
So she was? I didn't...
Yeah, so she just, like, waved and then left.
That's great.
Yeah, that was fun. Anyway, yeah, so we obviously came up with this bet already, but poison gas attacks, we noticed, in this block happen all the time in this show. It's, like, Scarecrow's whole gimmick. Joker does it pretty frequently. Poison Ivy does it.
Because you can't really shoot characters.
Yeah, it's much more convenient to just throw a gas bomb at them and have them cough a little bit and then pass out.
Yeah, and pass out or whatever. Like, so instead, you're not just killing everyone, they're at least incapacitating them or driving them crazy.
Or, you know, punching them a bunch, because that is more difficult to animate. Which, I'm not saying that to, like, slag on the show or anything, obviously, but it is.
So, yeah, I said there will be... 4 poison gas attacks.
Yeah, and I'm going
4
with
or less.
Yeah, and I'm going with 7. We're just going to use
4 or more or 7 or more, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I said or less.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or more. We're doing individual instances of poison gas, so if there's like 3 in an episode, that's 3.
Yeah.
But also kind of a common sense thing about whether it's a gas attack or like Batman throwing a smoke bomb. Basically someone has to be incapacitated by it, or the intent has to clearly be incapacitation.
Yeah, right.
If they're not, which means, you know, if Batman gets away from the Joker spraying poison in his face, that still counts.
Yeah, if Batman has to put on a mask, for example.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, if Joker sprays poison ivy in the face with his flower, which definitely happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
That counts, even though she's immune, because she's immune to toxins. Yeah, that's the bet. I'm looking forward to this next block of episodes. We've obviously watched a couple of them already, but, you know, which we don't usually do. But, you know, they've been pretty good so far, so I'm excited to wrap this up and get to what we're doing next, which we'll talk about next episode.
Hell yeah.
Well, on the note of hell yeah, this this has been Steve Austin's podcast about Toonami. Man, I would fucking listen to that. This has actually been Hyperspace Broadcast. As always, I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby, Stone Cold Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week as we wrap up Batman the Animated Series, Season 1.
316.
Some acknowledgements. Bumpers were taken from the video Cartoon Network Batman TAS Bumpers and Promos uploaded by TWO96 on YouTube. The opening and closing music is Vapor Diving by Onatech off the album Onatech Instrumentals, Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and I recommend that you do, because it's pretty good stuff. Rights were secured through Jamendo.